Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for this listening session at the RTC Weekly Download. For today's listening session, we will start off with a program called Suspense, and you can guess what that's about. This particular half hour is about the pasteboard box from 1946, and then after that is comic book time with the Green Hornet and Girl in Peril from 1947. And here we go with Suspense in 3, 2, 1.
Now, Roma Wines, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present
Suspense. Tonight, Roma Wines bring you Mr. Joseph Cotton, a star of The Pasteboard Box, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live, to your happiness in entertaining guests, to your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glassful would be very pleasant, as Roma Wines bring you Mr. Joseph Cotton in a remarkable tale of
Suspense.
Save it, Walder. I've taken all of that I can. I'm through, you understand? Through.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I couldn't help but overhear.
What's the difference now?
I hope you haven't quarreled seriously with your brother,
quarreled.
Sir.
Quarreled? What else have I ever done with him but quarrels?
Well, I realize it's a bit difficult at times, sir, but I'm sure he has your best interest at heart.
Yeah, well, from now on he can stop worrying about my best interest because I'm getting out of his life tonight for good. I grabbed my hat and coat and rushed out of the house, looking wild-eyed and distracted. I caught a taxi right in front of the door. Told him to go to the 23rd Street Ferry. On the ferry, I stood by the stern rail. I walked up and down, puffing hard on a cigarette, looking out into the fog and acting nervous and jumpy. I leaned against the rail and bowed my head down on my arms. Two or three people standing around there began to look at me. Then, when we were out about third way in the middle of the stream, I took off my coat that had my name and address written with indelible ink in the label, and my hat that had my initials stamped in gold on the sweatband, and laid them down on the deck, climbed up on the rail, and jumped.
Hey, look out! Look out!
It was as easy as that. A fight with my brother that was loud enough so the houseman couldn't help but hear it. A jump off the 23rd Street Ferry, leaving plenty of identification behind. An easy swim back to shore where I'd planted my dry clothes. And a phone call to the news to report my own suicide. It was just as easy as that. On Friday afternoon, I waited across the street until I saw Williams, the houseman, leaving for his usual weekend. And then I let myself in the front door and walked back to the study.
Come in, Williams. I thought you'd gone.
Hello, Walter.
Jack.
What's the matter, Walter? You look as though you'd seen a ghost.
Jack, haven't you seen the papers? I thought you were dead.
Yeah, I changed my mind.
Jack, how could you? How could you have done such a thing?
I didn't. I just went swimming, that's all. Don't tell anyone I'm here.
Yes, this is Mr. Parcell. Yes, I told you once it was broken. I'm sure I don't know. I know I certainly didn't do it. Yes, it's still in the box. I'll send you the pieces if you like. Well, that's a little late, I'm afraid. Oh, it doesn't matter anyway. It's the principle of the thing. Besides, I'm going out of town. Yes. Yes, I suppose there will be someone here to receive it. All right. Silly. Goldfish bowl.
What?
You know, I ordered a larger one and it arrived this morning, all smashed up, and they were arguing about sending me a new one. There it is in that big square box. You can see for yourself it's smashed.
Certainly like you, Walter. At the last minute, you're worrying about a $2 goldfish bowl.
What do you mean, the last minute?
Well, you just said over the phone you were going out of town.
Yes?
What's the idea?
Well, Jack, I was terribly upset when I heard that... Well, when I thought...
I'll bet. Where are you going?
Well, I hadn't quite made up my mind. I just wanted to get away.
Taking quite a lot of luggage for just a little trip out of town, aren't you, Walter? Clearing the papers out of your desk, too, huh?
Yes, I simply thought I... Well, I could get a little work done while I was away.
Or were you thinking of staying away for a while because somebody might ask you some questions about why I jumped in the river, and the answers might make you look like a heel?
Of course not. Such an idea never occurred to me.
You always were yellow. You'd run away from anything.
Jack, that's quite enough.
That's right. Those are the truest words you ever spoke. And I wouldn't bother about packing luggage anymore if I were you.
Why not?
Because where you're going, you won't need any luggage.
What do you mean?
This is what I mean. Jack! Jack! No, you're joking! Jack! Jack! You won't need any luggage anymore, brother. It's like Cain felt about Abel, I suppose. There he was lying on the floor, looking as though it was me lying there, only it wasn't, it was him. And I was glad. It's a funny thing about twins. Being one yourself, you'd notice them more than most people would. And all the twins I'd ever known had got along good, extra good. But not me and Walter. I hated him ever since I could remember. I hated him because the old man was about the only one who could tell us apart. And it was Walter he always called to him, not me. I hated him for what he got and what I didn't. I hated him because he was always good and I was bad. I hated him because the old man left everything he had to him, and it wasn't hay either. Because I couldn't do anything about it on account of that forgery rap I'd taken. And I hated him for the way he'd taken care of me since I got out of jail and thrown at my face every chance he got. I hated him for all those things and a lot more. And I was dead and I'd killed him. And I was glad. You don't believe me? Brother, I felt great. I went over to the mirror and combed my hair over on the left side like his. I locked the study door and went upstairs to the bathroom and shaved off my mustache. He was clean-shaven. I went back to the bedroom and put on one of his suits. When I got through and stood in front of the big full-length bedroom mirror, I looked the spitting image of him. No one in the world could have told that I wasn't Walter Parcell. In fact, I was Walter Parcell. Went back to the study. All I had to do now was dispose of the evidence. But first, I couldn't resist looking around. It was mine now, all mine. Those stupid fish he had all over the place and glass tanks and the books he never read and all the rest of it. In his desk was a list of all the bonds and securities and the number of his safe deposit box and combination to the safe and the bank book, all nice and neat. On the desk was a picture of Helen Winters, the little vixen he was engaged to, and I made a mental note that I'd at least have to call her before I left town and look funny if I didn't. I might even do more than call her. Well, there's no use stalling any longer. It had to be done. I got the body over my shoulder, carried it upstairs and put it in the bathtub. I locked the bathroom door from the inside. Then I got to work. Oh,
suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Joseph Cotton in The Pasteboard Box by Joe Grenzebach. Roma Wines' presentation tonight in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Here's a simple secret about entertaining that has won compliments for many a hostess. The next time you have dinner guests, keep them pleasantly occupied during that hour before the meal by serving Roma California Sherry. Serving Roma Sherry before dinner has become a friendly American custom. Yes, glorious golden amber Roma Sherry with tempting fragrance and intriguing nut-like taste is the perfect first call for dinner. And you'll find Roma Sherry equally pleasing with a tasty evening snack, a delightful wine to serve any time. Roma Sherry, like all Roma wine, is a true natural wine, crushed from choicest grapes, grown in California's finest vineyards, then unhurriedly guided to taste perfection by Roma's ancient winemaking skill, bottled at the winery for unvarying goodness. Delight your family, your guests, with delicious Roma Sherry, now selling at the lowest prices in years. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, for uniformly high quality at low cost. Remember, more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Joseph Cotton as star of The Pasteboard Box, a play well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It was early morning before I was able to leave the house. I walked to the nearest subway with a suitcase, a heavy suitcase, because it was also weighted down inside with old furnace grates and sash weights. Got off the subway at Dyckman Street and took the Dyckman Street ferry to Jersey. About halfway across, the suitcase that I had up on the rail as though it was something for me to lean on
just sort of slipped out of my hands into the river.
I looked mad and then foolish, and people that saw it happened snickered behind their hands.
Did you see that?
That was there.
The guy just dropped the suitcase overboard.
About an hour later, the same thing happened on a 42nd Street ferry, and the mortal remains of Walter Parcell were gone. All but his head. At first, I hadn't know what to do with that head. Wouldn't fit into either of the suitcases, no matter what I did, and then I thought of that box. That big pasteboard box that the goldfish bowl had come in. It was still sitting there in the corner of the desk. I weighted it and wrapped up the outside in the paper that it had come in and started out again, the 14th Street ferry this time. I had it balanced up there on the rail just like I'd had the others, and then...
Hey, look out! Oh, it's all right, mister. I've got it.
Oh, let go.
Oh, I've got it. Hey. What's the matter?
Oh, I thought you dropped it.
Oh, no. No, here it is. Hey, that was close, all right. Another second and it would have been gone for good.
Yeah. It had been gone for good, all right. Walking across 14th Street on the way back from the ferry, people were pushing behind me, and the next thing I knew, I was in a department store. I was walking down one of the aisles just to keep moving and not attract attention when it hit me right between the eyes. There was another box. A box just like mine. It was sitting up there in one of the counters, and next to it was an old guy looking at some bow ties. I walked over and put my box on the counter next to his, and I pretended I was waiting for the clerk. Then after a couple of minutes, I pretended to change my mind. I picked up the box, his box, of course, and started for the door.
Say, I say there. I say, sir, you've taken my box.
Oh, what do you mean, your box? Let go of me.
But it is. It's my box. You left yours there on the counter.
Oh, are you crazy? Let go, I tell you.
What's the trouble here?
Why, this man's got my package and won't give it back.
Oh, shoplifter, huh?
No, no, it's not that. He left a package of his own there, but he insists that mine is his.
Now, what's in it?
A parchment lampshade. I bought it at your furniture department just now. Uh-huh. The girl will confirm that.
What's in yours?
Mine?
Yes, what's in your box?
Why...
We'll open it up and see.
No.
It's the only way to tell. Open them both up. You think this is your package? Then...
No, wait. I made a mistake. It isn't. Here, now give me mine.
Just a minute.
Give it to me.
Just a minute. Can you prove...
Give it to me.
Oh, give it to him. It's his. I saw him put it there.
Very well,
thank
but
you,
I...
Thank you.
Why, he acted like a madman.
Maybe I did act like a madman. I guess I did, because I was pretty close to panic when I got out of the store. I started walking, and I just walked. I don't know how far, how long, but all I could think of was, what'll I do now? What'll I do with it? What'll I do with it? I didn't snap out of it until I found myself a half a block from home, and not knowing how I got there, all I knew was I still had that box, and I had to get rid of it. Then I saw the sewer, a corner sewer with a big, wide opening. I crossed over to it as though I were going to step up on the curb. I stumbled. I gave it a good kick. Slid in, and I heard it fall. I got home, and a half hour later, I was just beginning to relax. The doorbell rang. I went out in the hall, switched on the vestibule lights, and opened the door. There stood a couple of kids.
Yes, this is yours, ain't it, mister?
What?
We were standing across the street when you dropped it. Then we saw you come into this house. That's how we know. We got some string and a fish hook and pulled it out. It is yours, ain't it?
No.
You mean it ain't yours?
No, I never saw it before in my life. Now beat it.
Oh, then we can open it, huh, Johnny?
Wait, no.
I don't know. Maybe we ought to take it to the cops.
Here, you give that to me. Give it to me.
But you said...
I made a mistake. I didn't recognize it. Now give it to me. Beat it.
Well, aren't you glad to get it back?
Huh? Oh, sure. Here.
Thanks. Gee, $5. There must be diamonds in that box.
It was back. The kids were hardly down the steps before I was out the house without a hat, a coat, or anything running toward 2nd Avenue. I didn't care who saw me now. Didn't dare stop for a taxi. I had to keep running. I couldn't stop for a second. I kept on running up 2nd Avenue to 59th Street, going out onto the bridge. I was still running, and I didn't stop until I got nearly to the middle. And then I threw it. Out over the railing as far as I could. I watched it arc down and saw the white splash in the darkness as it hit the water a couple of hundred feet below. It was gone. No matter what, it was gone. Somehow, I got home. But it was daylight before I could get myself to sleep. Monday morning, I felt better. Got up fairly early and went down to study and make my plans. Seeing the picture of Helen Winters on the disc reminded me I ought to call her. If Walter left town without even calling the girl he was supposed to marry, it wouldn't look so good. There was no answer, so I hung up. Then I rang for Williams, the house man.
Yes, sir?
Oh, Williams, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I'm going to have to let you go.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it, sir, if it's anything I've done.
Oh, quite the contrary. I've found our association most pleasant, but the death of my brother has been quite a shock, of course.
Of course, sir.
I'm going away. I don't know how long I shall be gone or when I shall be back or if I shall come back here at all, so I thought it was best this way.
Yes, sir. When will you be leaving, sir?
Within a few days. There's no hurry, but I wanted you to be able to make your own plans. I'm making arrangements this afternoon to sell the house and the furniture. And the associations here are painful. You understand?
I understand, sir.
My brother Jack had his faults, of course. We all do.
I know how you feel, sir.
But after all, Williams, he was my brother.
Yes, sir. Blood is thicker than water.
You're so right, Williams. That first performance left me feeling pretty satisfied. The next one wasn't so easy. But for things to look right, it had to be done. So after breakfast, I went down to police headquarters.
Well, what can we do for you, Mr. Parcell?
Why, I'm going away for a while, and I wondered if you had recovered my poor brother's...
His body?
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. We haven't, Mr. Parcell.
Oh, I see.
While you're here, though, there is something you might look at for us.
Very well.
This way, please. Hmm. It's just a routine matter of identification, but we like to have these things on the record, you know.
Of course. Something you found?
Yeah, that's right. Fished it out of the East River this morning.
The East River?
That's right. The East River.
For a minute, I just stopped breathing. Because it wasn't in the East River that I jumped off the ferry.
That was on the other side of the island. The East River was where I'd thrown it.
And then I was all right again because I saw what he had. A pair of trousers. Mine.
You recognize these, Mr. Parcell?
Oh, yes. Those are the trousers my brother wore the night he died.
Uh-huh. Probably kicked him off and tried to swim to shore. Yeah, well, thanks, Mr. Parcell. That's all we need.
Very well, but you said the East River, and it was the North River where poor Jack...
Oh, carried down by the current and around by the tide. Mm. Caught in the propeller of a ship, maybe. Funny things happen in the waters around this island, Mr. Parcell?
Yes. Yes, I imagine they do. So, that was all right, too. When I got out of headquarters, I went across the street to a pay station and phoned Helen Winters again. There was no answer. I hung up. Then I went uptown to the bank, Walter's Bank. I'd never been in it before in my life, and I'd been wondering how I'd know who to be chummy to, but I needn't have worried about that.
Well, good morning, Mr. Parcell.
Good morning.
We're all terribly sorry to hear of your bereavement, Mr. Parcell.
Yes, thank you. As a matter of fact, that's what brings me here.
I see. Something about the estate?
Oh, no, but I shall want to get into my safe deposit box.
Why, certainly, Mr. Parcell.
Thank you. By the way, do you happen to know what my cash balance is? Just roughly.
Roughly between 32 and 33,000.
I'll want 5,000 in cash. I'll make out a counter check. You can forward the rest when I've made banking connections in Mexico.
Oh, Mexico. Hmm. Do you expect to be in Mexico for any length of time?
Oh, yes, for quite a length of time.
Oh. Shall we go down to the vault, sir?
Yes, by all means. When I got out of the bank, it was raining, but I didn't care. I liked it. I was walking on air anyway, and I decided to walk home that way. It's nearly 30 blocks, and I was soaking wet when I got there, but what's a little rain to a guy with $100,000 in his pocket? Front door wasn't locked. In I went and hung up my hat and coat in the hall and was wondering whether to have a nice hot bath before calling Helen Winters. And when I saw it... The box, that horrible pasteboard box, it had come back. For a second, I thought my mind had gone. But there it was, sitting on the desk. Wet and soggy and the limp paper peeling off as though it had been fished out of the river just that minute. And then I remembered I hadn't seen it sink. And what the cop had said about tides and currents. And then the doorbell rang. I rushed to the window. There was a police car outside. For a moment, I thought of grabbing up the box and running, escaping out of the back somehow, and... Then I knew that wasn't any use. It didn't matter. If it was some sort of a police plan, it didn't matter anyway. And if it wasn't, if it was just another one of those terrible coincidences, there was still time. Whatever they wanted, I could bluff it through and there'd still be time. I'd pull myself together and went out and opened the door. Yes?
We're from headquarters.
Yes.
You're Walter Parcell.
Walter Parcell? They thought I was Walter Parcell. They didn't even know he was dead. That was all right. There was still time.
I said, are you Walter Parcell?
Yes, I'm Walter Parcell.
You know a young woman named Helen Winters?
Oh, Helen Winters, of course. She's my fiancée.
Then I'm afraid you're going to have to come along with us, Mr. Parcell.
With you, why?
Helen Winters has been murdered. And I might as well tell you now that anything you say will be used against you. The evidence is pretty conclusive.
That you
murdered her.
I didn't. I couldn't.
We found her this morning in the coroner report. She was killed Friday night. You were seen entering the place that night, and you were seen leaving. A gun that we traced to you was found in an ash can a block away. Now, what do you expect us to believe, Mr. Parcell?
Wait a minute. There's a mistake. There's been a terrible mistake. I'm not Walter Parcell. I'm his brother. I'm his brother, Jack.
The one who committed suicide?
Yes. Only I didn't. I changed my mind. I swam back to shore. I came back here, and I found Walter. He was dead. He killed himself. And now I know why. Don't you see? Because he murdered the girl.
You didn't report it. Where's the body?
The body?
Yes, yes, the body, the body.
No, that's it. Now, look, everyone knew I quarreled with Walter, and so I thought they'd pin it on me. I thought they'd say I killed him. So I disposed of the body. Then I took his place. We're twins, don't you see?
Mr. Parcell, I've been in this business a long time, and I've heard some beauties. But I never had a man ask me to believe one like that.
It's true. I swear it's true.
All right, then, where's the body?
I threw it in the river with the weights.
I thought so. Come on.
Now, wait a minute.
Come on.
I can prove it. I can prove it.
Yeah, how?
Because I've still got his head.
His head?
That would prove it, wouldn't it? Or wouldn't it?
It certainly would.
Come on. I'll show you. Here in that box, see?
All right, open it.
Sure. I threw it in the river and it got back here somehow. It's still wet, see? It's...
That doesn't look like anybody's head to me, Mr. Parcell.
It's...
To me, it looks like just an ordinary goldfish ball.
That was it, of course. The goldfish bowl he'd been arguing about on the telephone when I came back and found him packing up, running away because he'd murdered his girlfriend. So, I don't know where Walter is now in those swirling tides and currents, but I know one thing. Wherever he is, he must be laughing his head off.
Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Before we hear again from Joseph Cotton, the star of the Pasteboard Box, tonight's suspense play, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. Each day, more Americans are switching to Roma and discovering what a wonderful help Roma wine is in making simple home entertainment successful. The reason? Taste. Superb taste for only pennies a glass. And, says famous hostess Elsa Maxwell, there's a Roma California wine to delight everyone. Rich, ruby red Roma port, mellow, nut-like Roma sherry, smooth, golden Roma muscatel, and flame-bright Roma Tokay. I give my guests their choice and share with them Roma's goodness. Each of these fine Roma wines may be served with cake, fruit, nuts, or other tasty snacks when guests drop in. Many prefer these wines with dessert. You'll find them delightful any time. Get Roma wine tomorrow. You'll be amazed how little such taste luxury costs. For Roma wine, famed for uniformly fine quality, is now selling at the lowest prices in years. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma wine, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
This is Joseph Cotton. I've enjoyed my appearance on Suspense as I always do. Next Thursday, an unique actress whom all of us here in Hollywood love and admire, as you do, will be the leading lady on Suspense, Dame Mae Whitty. Miss Whitty will appear as a kindly lady whose advertisement requesting genteel part-time employment involves her in a predicament which threatens first her freedom and then her very life. I'm sure we'll all want to make it a point to listen. Oh, and by the way, if you feel that the character I played tonight was a little, shall we say, extreme, please forgive me. I've never played twins before, and I guess I just lost my hand.
Joseph Cotton appeared through the courtesy of David O. Selznick, in whose production Duel in the Sun, he will soon be seen. Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you Dame Mae Whitty as star of Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills.
Produced by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Thank you. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Want a brand new breakfast idea? Then get the Betty Crocker cereal tray, the Betty Crocker cereal tray. Yes, indeed. Try the brand new cereal assortment with 10 individual packages in all. 4 Wheaties, 4 Cheerios, 2 Kix. All top favorites and all extra fresh. Yes, it's fun to take your pick from Wheaties, Cheerios, and Kix. Get the Betty Crocker cereal tray, the Betty Crocker cereal tray. Get that tray today.
And now, the Betty Crocker Cereal Tray presents... The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reid, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reid in the thrilling adventure of Girl in Peril.
Extra! Extra! Breakfast extra! Betty Crocker cereal tray makes breakfast fun! Betty Crocker cereal tray makes breakfast fun!
Yes, sir, the Betty Crocker cereal tray is really a breakfast extra. All in one handy carton that gives you all your top favorite cereals. Wheaties, Cheerios, and Kix. You can take your choice right at the table. You can have your own separate individual package. Wheaties one morning, Cheerios the next, and Kix the next. It's fun, and you always open a fresh package. Try it. Get the Betty Crocker cereal tray.
Britt Reid was responsible for the capture of Dryden and Gilpin, head men in the numbers racket. In our last Green Hornet adventure, Britt met and fought the racketeers in an evening battle at the home of the police commissioner. 15 minutes earlier, on that same evening, a car moved slowly past the commissioner's home. The two men in the machine were well-dressed and had the appearance of businessmen. They didn't look like members of the numbers racket.
That's the commissioner's house. I'll drive slowly while you look and see if there's a light on the third floor.
Yeah, there is a light up there, Al. Is that Dryden's room?
Yeah. He said he'd leave the back door unlocked so he could walk right in.
I don't see any cars around. Are we the only ones that are to see him tonight?
All I know is that he and Gilpin will be there to give us our cut for the past week.
Hey, Al. Take a look up there. Looks to me like their window's been smashed.
Let me lean over and see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's smashed. Don't get out.
What are you going to do?
We'll go down to the corner drugstore and telephone Dryden to make sure everything's okay. I haven't liked the setup since he cut in.
He was smart enough to get a job as houseman in the home of the police commissioner. Put him on the inside of things so as he could tip us off when the law was going to raid one of our places.
We did all right without Dryden. I don't like having a guy like that in town. He could be dangerous.
Well, you know the situation, Al. We had to take him in.
I'll park right behind that convertible. I'll go into the drugstore and telephone.
We can thank the Daily Sentinel and those editorials for getting the police steamed up about our racket.
Carsley.
Huh?
Speaking of the Sentinel, get a load of the license plate on that convertible right ahead of us.
Oh, what about it?
That car belongs to Britt Reid, the publisher of the Sentinel.
Yeah? Well, what's he doing in this neighborhood?
How do I know? Oh, I'd like to punch him in the nose for those stories he's written about us.
He's probably in that drugstore. Why don't you go ahead and pop him?
Don't crack wise.
Yeah, I'll go with him. I want to get some cigarettes.
I wonder what Reed's doing in this part of the city.
He and Higgins are pretty good friends. Maybe came to call on the commissioner and found he wasn't home.
I don't know. See anything of Reed?
No. Store's just about empty. Don't see anyone but that dame at the phone and bank.
Something for you, gentlemen?
Oh, I want to get some cigarettes.
Right there, sir, the machine.
Oh, yes, I see it.
I want to use your telephone. You got a booth here?
No, sir, just the phone on the ledge in the rear. It's being used right now.
Now, wait. Come on, Karslake, we'll go back to the phone.
Yeah, maybe that babe will hurry her call if she sees someone waiting.
Yeah, well set up. Wonder what her face is like.
Hey, maybe she's driving Reed's car.
What? Could be.
Police headquarters, yes.
Hey, Karslake, get a load of that.
Is this Commissioner Hagen's office? This is Linda Travis of the Daily Sentinel.
Hey, shut up. Linda. I want to hear this.
Tell the commissioner to get to his home right away. Mr. Reed went there to accuse Dryden of beating the numbers racket, and they're fighting. Tell the commissioner it's a matter of life and death.
Gilpin's with Dryden. If Higgins gets there, they'll both be in a spot.
I could call and warn him.
Too late. The commissioner's already got word. He'll be here before we can move.
Yes.
We've got to take action somewhere else.
Now, what do you mean?
You'll see.
All right, thank you. Oh, what? I didn't know anyone was here.
It's all right, lady. You through that phone?
Yes, I'm through.
Come on, Karslake. We're going after her.
Listen, Al, what are you going to do?
Shut up and come along.
Aren't you going to use the phone?
No, I've got a better plan.
Did you change your mind about phoning?
What's it to you, sister? Miss Travis.
Oh.
You're getting into the wrong car.
The wrong car?
You're riding in the car and back.
What are you talking about? Who are you? How do you know me?
We happened to hear the phone call you just made. And, lady, that was a mistake.
A gun.
Now, don't start anything or you'll be a dead tomato. Just get into that car and I won't have to use this gun.
Where are you taking me?
Get in there. You drive, Cosley.
I'll get in on the other side.
In you go, Linda.
If you think you can get away with an abduction like this, you're crazy.
Now, that phone call you just made is likely to blow our business sky high.
You're in the numbers racket.
That's right, sister. And you're going to be a hostage for the boys you just threw to the cops.
Where are you taking me?
You're going to meet a girl called Molly. You're going to be nice and cozy in an underground hideout. If the cops get our pals, I'll telephone Britt Reed and make a little proposition.
Commissioner Higgins and a couple of picked men from police headquarters lost no time. With the siren wide open, they raced to the commissioner's home and hurried to the third floor where they found Britt Reed in a hand-to-hand struggle. Dryden and Gilpin were captured, and there was evidence in Dryden's room to prove that the pair were leaders of the numbers racket. Meanwhile, Linda Travis found herself in a dingy apartment next door to Gilpin's tailor shop, where she met the woman called Molly.
What's the matter with you, Al? Have you lost your mind?
Don't get lippy with me.
But bringing this girl here, what are we going to do with her?
Hang on to her.
Not me, brother.
Oh, yes, you, Molly.
You're hurting me.
We can keep her in that place that was fitted up downstairs. She can yell her head off if she wants to, and no one can hear her.
I'll not be there long.
You'll be there as long as we want to keep you.
Al, I don't like it.
You don't have to like it. Cops are going to get Dryden and Gilpin. I can't take any chances on those two.
Well, if they're caught, it's their own funeral.
Yeah. It is, unless they try to make it soft for themselves by telling the cops a few things. And it's my funeral.
But they can't prove anything against you, Al.
They can prove plenty. Remember, I wasn't always in the numbers racket. And neither were you, Karslake.
I know.
Dryden still has a certain gun and some other evidence that'll tie us into the Limpy Ryan murder.
Limpy Ryan? Al, I forgot all about that.
Well, you hadn't better be forgetting. We've got to get Dryden out of the cops' hands or else. And that's why I brought this dame here.
You've got an awful lot to say in front of her.
Shut up. I know what I'm doing. Now take her downstairs and see that she's comfortable. You go along, Cosley.
Okay.
How long are you going to keep her here?
I don't know.
She'll have to have food.
That wouldn't be any problem if you were the right kind of a dame.
Don't give me that, Al. Why should I wear myself out cooking?
Well, you can fix up something here, can't you, Molly?
No, I can't.
I'll take care of the food. Stop beefing. I'll have it sent in from the beanery across the street.
Where are you going now?
Out. I'm going to watch for the next edition of the Sentinel and see what happens to Dryden and Gilpin.
Paper, mister?
Yeah.
Here you are.
Keep it changed.
Thanks, mister.
Sentinel X Street Paper, read all about the numbers package.
You have everything given away.
Hello, Al. Hello. Cup coffee?
Not right now, George. Anyone in the phone booth?
No, no one. How's things?
Molly's sick.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry. It is serious. I hope not.
She'll be all right in a day or so. But meanwhile, I'll have to have some meals sent over to the apartment for her. You know how Molly is about cooking.
Sure, sure, I know. I fix up good meals.
Okay, George. I'll see you later about him. I've got to make a phone call. Got the number of Reed's apartment right here somewhere. Here it is. I hope he's home. If he isn't, I'll have to try around until I locate him.
At that very moment, Britt Reed was in his apartment. He had been calling Linda Travis, and he was worried because he couldn't locate the girl. Neither could he account for the fact that his car had been abandoned in front of the drugstore.
Hello?
Reed?
Yes, speaking.
Listen, and get this the first time because I'm not going to repeat it. Thanks to you, the cops have captured Dryden and Gilpin. But we've captured Linda Travis. She's going to be held until Dryden and Gilpin are free. And I mean free, not just out on bail. Now you'd better see that the charges against those two are dropped, or the girl's life won't be worth a dime.
Britt Reed was momentarily stunned by the news that Linda had been captured. Then he went into action. He telephoned his secretary, Lenore Case, Gunnigan, the city editor, and several other members of the staff of the Daily Sentinel. To each one, he said the same thing.
There's an emergency. I want to meet you at the office just as soon as possible. And you'd better be prepared to stay the rest of the night.
Suffering snakes, Reed. What are you going to do about Miss Travis?
I'm going to find her, Axford, if it's humanly possible. Where's Cato?
I sent him out to the kitchen to fix a pot of coffee before we start out.
Tell him to put it in a thermos bottle and we'll take it with us.
Right.
And tell him to get my car out. I'll be ready as soon as I've called the police commissioner.
I'll go tell Cato.
That girl's got to be found no matter what it takes. This might be a case for the Green Hornet.
We'll continue our story in just a moment. Hey, kids, no matter whether you're a husky farmer or a city slicker, you've never seen a slicker city than the Model City that comes on the Betty Crocker cereal tray. Just listen to this. The 10 separate boxes of Wheaties, Cheerios, and Kix in the Betty Crocker cereal tray, plus the cereal tray carton itself, are designed to make a true-to-life Model City, complete with different style houses, stores, and business buildings. Just cut out, assemble, and there's your Model City. Besides the buildings, you also get cutouts of autos, fences, garages, and a lot more things. Just on one avenue in the Model City, there's a big service station with gasoline pump. Next to it is an ice cream store with a dentist's office upstairs. Then there's the Model City Bank and a hotel with coffee shop and restaurant. All this plus different style houses. Everything complete, even storage sheds in back of buildings and awnings in front. All true to life in every detail. Easy to build, too. There's no pasting or gluing needed, and many slots are pre-cut. Best of all, different houses and stores come on different Betty Crocker cereal trays. Just think of the fun you can have cutting out and setting up your own Model City. Ask your grocer for the Betty Crocker cereal tray. That's the handy cereal package with all three of your breakfast favorites. Wheaties, Cheerios, and Kix. Get yours now. Now back to our story. It was late at night, after midnight, in fact, when Britt Reed went to his office.
Lenore Case, his secretary, Gunnigan, the city editor, and several of the crack reporters and columnists were on hand. In a few words, the young publisher told about the capture of Linda Travis and the price of her freedom.
The police can't let those crooks go free.
Of course not, Gunnigan. Even if they did, I doubt that it would help.
If Linda has seen her captors, they'll not dare let her go.
What about the police?
I've talked to the commissioner. Axford has gone to get some pictures from the private files. Now, here's what I want you men to do. Go through our records and dig up all you can about every hoodlum in the city. Gunnigan, you prepare a list of the ones who might be involved in the numbers racket.
Right.
Here's Axford.
Hey, Reed. Here's a lot of pictures of hoodlums from the police files.
Give them to Gunnigan. I think Linda Travis was captured in or near a drugstore close to Higgins' home. Larry, you go to that store with a picture of Linda and pictures of known racketeers. See if the clerk can tell anything.
Right.
We can discard this picture of Limpy Ryan. He's been dead for some time. The cops are still looking for the man who killed him.
I'll give the rest to Lowry so he can get started. Then get out the records.
Ed Lowry set out for the all-night drugs tour, and the city room became a beehive of activity. Records, clippings, and photographs were brought from dusty files, the information condensed, and copies made. It was 2 o'clock in the morning when Gunnigan entered Britt Reed's office.
How did Lowry make out?
The clerk remembered Linda. She said the two men came into the store while Linda was phoning. They followed her out.
Could she identify the men?
Not from any pictures that Lowry had with him. I just sent him back there with another batch.
Britt contacted the police commissioner to compare notes. Then he and Lenore Case studied data as it came from the city room. It was half an hour later when Gunnigan rushed in.
Hey, Reed, I just heard from Lowry.
What's the report?
Is it good?
The drug clerk identified the two men. Their names are Al Spinner and Joe Cartley.
We've got to get the lowdown on those two. Send the leg men out to hit the night spots. Get all you can, but be careful. If we tip our hand, it might mean curtains for Linda.
Britt Reed maintained a steady vigil through the long hours of the night, while Miss Case stood by faithfully. One after another, his men called in. Time after time, the commissioner called, but there was no report but failure. No one seemed to know where Spinner and Carslake might be found. The morning was well advanced when the door of Britt Reed's office opened. A swarthy man with dark hair stood hesitantly in the opening. He held something wrapped in a newspaper.
Mr. Reed can't see
anyone.
You,
Mr. Reed? You're the one I want to see.
Look, fellow.
Wait, let me show you. I have plate from my restaurant. I run restaurant 14th Street. I send breakfast across street this morning. It's big breakfast. Eggs and bacon and bottled ketchup. The dishes come back dirty and this plate, it's covered with ketchup. I hold beneath faucet, I rinse, then I see...
Great Scott, it's Linda's writing.
Yeah, there's writing on the plate.
Well, what does it say?
Take this to Mr. Reed of the Daily Sentinel and he'll give you $50. Just the other day in a restaurant she showed how her ballpoint pen wrote on everything, including china.
She wrote this, protected it with her clear nail polish, and covered it with ketchup.
It say you give $50.
You'll get $100 if you'll tell me where you delivered breakfast.
He's right across street from my restaurant and apartment house. He's a good fellow who lives there. He come often to my restaurant.
Why did he have breakfast sent over this morning?
His wife, she's sick.
Yeah. Look at these two pictures. Do you recognize them?
Oh, sure, sure. This is my friend Al. He's the one who ordered breakfast.
How we know that Linda's alive and where to find her. Miss Case, get the commissioner. We'll call at that apartment.
It was that evening in Britt Reed's apartment. The young publisher's face was drawn with worry as he talked to his faithful valet.
Will police not help, Mr. Britt?
Well, the commissioner will do anything I suggest. He's had men watching the apartment all day. A tray of food was sent over from the restaurant at noon. Another one at dinner time.
You think it for Miss Travis?
Yeah, of course it is.
Well, then you know she's still alive.
She's still alive, but I know she'll be killed if there's any move against Al.
You talked to him?
Yes, when we went there this morning. Higgins pretended that Dryden had given him the name of Al and Carslake. He told the crooks it was just a routine questioning, but it didn't fool them.
It didn't?
No. Al dropped a couple of remarks that were calculated to be significant in case we suspected he held Linda. It made me understand she'd die if the police made a move.
But what is to be done?
I asked Higgins to hold everything until tomorrow to give me a chance. There must be some way the Hornet can act. Some way the police can't use. If we could just get everyone out of that apartment, I think... Kato,
I have an idea.
Oh, that could.
Get the mask and gun while I get some things from the vault. I'll call the commissioner to let him know my plan. Get ready to travel. I've thought of a move for the Green Hornet.
Stepping through a secret panel in the rear of a closet in the bedroom, Britt Reed and Cato went along a narrow passageway built within the walls of the apartment itself. This passage led to an adjoining building, which fronted on a dark side street. Though supposedly abandoned, this building served as the hiding place for the sleek, super-powered Black Beauty, streamlined car of the Green Hornet. Britt Reed pressed a button. The great car roared into life. A section of the wall in front raised automatically, then closed as the gleaming Black Beauty sped into the darkness. The old three-story apartment house was owned by the woman called Molly. The furtive tenants of the upper floors were the kind of people who neither asked nor answered questions. A basement room had been soundproofed and had often served as a prison for those whom Molly's friends wanted to hold captive.
You see, honey, the boys helped me pay for this place, so I'm obligated to them.
Yes, I see, Molly.
But just between you and me and the gatepost, nothing could help you. You heard too much.
You mean about Al and Karslake killing Limpy Ryan?
Yeah. The boys wouldn't have talked so much in front of you if they'd intended to let you go.
Then why don't they kill me and get it over with? Save themselves the trouble of bringing in food.
They may have to show proof that you're alive to deal with Reed.
They can't deal with him. He won't deal. He's...
What's this?
Hey, Molly.
I smell smoke.
The place upstairs is full of it.
A fire.
Hurry, Al. It's getting worse all the time. Get out of here.
It's coming in here.
The whole building's full of it. People upstairs are getting out.
Some yap cooking.
Not that. The place is on fire. Come on, get out. It'll go fast.
Let's hurry.
Not you. Get back there.
Al, put the gun down.
Shut up, Molly. Get out.
But the girl...
She stays here.
You can't leave her to burn.
She won't feel it. Get out, you hear? Hurry, Al. Molly, come on.
Listen, Al. Give the girl a chance.
To send us to the chair? Joe, get Molly out of here.
Come on, Molly, out you go.
Please, don't shoot her. Al, don't do it. Please, Al, don't shoot her.
Sorry, it's got to be this way.
Drop it, Al.
What?
You.
The Green Hornet.
Try this gas along with the smoke you're breathing. That's the beginning. The end will come behind bars.
You did get here. You did fire.
This way, Linda.
Oh, you can't leave him there on the floor. He'll be burned alive.
No, he won't. There's no fire. Come on with me.
No fire.
Just a lot of smoke from bombs that I tossed around the place.
Oh, there. Molly and Karslake.
Yes, I got them when they left your prison a minute ago. They'll stay unconscious till the police find them. Come on, down this hall.
Oh, you know your way around.
I scouted the building before I started the smoke shells.
Oh, but why did you come as the Green Hornet?
I didn't know who might see me. I couldn't use these methods as Britt Reed. Besides, Linda, I was prepared to kill if necessary.
Oh, there's not much smoke here.
Up these stairs. This is the back door. Cato's waiting over there in the Black Beauty. Now let's cross the alley to the side of that garage. You wait a couple of minutes and go to the front of the building. The police are on the way.
Oh, I've a lot to tell the police. Al and Karslake killed a man named Limpy Ryan. Dryden has the evidence. That's why they let Dryden into the numbers racket. That's why they wanted to get him out of jail. They were afraid he'd squeal.
Good. Give that information to the law, then write the story.
Oh, how will I explain the Green Hornet being here?
Tell the police I came to crack the Ryan murder because some of the gang tried to frame me for it. Saving you is merely incidental. Now, I've got to get away before the police come.
Oh, Britt, just a minute.
What?
Listen to me. I've got to speak now. I'll write the story, but that's all. After that, I thought I'd like newspaper work, but I can't take it. I'm going back to the West.
Oh, but Linda...
Oh, please. I've thought everything over, and I want to settle it now.
Well, this isn't the time or place to talk about that.
I've more to say, and if I don't say it now, I may never be able to say it. I think you're grand. You're a fine man. Britt, I'll always keep your secret. You carry on as the Green Hornet. Your father and I will be very proud when we read about what you've done.
Linda, you're just upset.
I know what I'm saying. Now, get going. You can't let the Hornet get all tangled up with a girl. Go on, darn your smokes in my eye. It makes me look like I'm crying. Hexford, why are you looking so glum?
I keep thinking of Linda leaving.
You too? Well, I think the West is just fine for her.
She had such a nice career started. Her story on the Ryan murder was a lulu. I wonder why she left.
You wouldn't understand. Neither would Britt Reed. No man would understand.
And why not?
Because you don't know what it's like for a girl to care very, very much for a man who's not the marrying kind.
Oh, golly. I didn't know she felt that way about me.
Oh, no.
Oh, Axford, what's the matter? You look dazed.
He is.
Gunnigan's looking for you. You'd better go to the city room.
Yes, sir. Right away.
He's thinking of Miss Travers.
Oh, I understand.
You don't. But, Mr. Reed, I'd like to speak about something.
Yes?
I've been around here for a long time, and I know the Sentinel policy, and... Well, I'd like a chance to get into the field and cover a story.
You, Miss Case?
Yes. You haven't replaced Miss Travis, and... Can't I try for the job?
Well, the game was too rough for Linda.
The guy never knew.
Huh?
It won't be too rough for me.
Well, I don't know.
Please.
All right, Miss Case.
Oh.
You'll get your chance.
Oh, thanks.
But just remember, whatever happens, you asked for it.
All about the Ryan murder. Sentinel reporters, evidence, nailed killer. Read all about it. Ryden turned state's evidence. Sentinel X-Tree. Pep-pep.
You step right up and take your choice. Yep, that's what you do at breakfast every single morning when you get the Betty Crocker cereal tray. That's the swell new cereal assortment, Wheaties, Cheerios, and Kix in 10 separate individual packages, all in one handy carton. Every morning you take your choice, Wheaties, Cheerios, or Kix, all top favorites, all in the Betty Crocker cereal tray. And say, here's something more. Every Betty Crocker cereal tray has a valuable silverware coupon right on the outside of the carton. By saving these coupons, you can get a set of lovely Oneida community silverware in an amazingly short time and at unbelievably low cost. Start saving those valuable coupons now. Get the Betty Crocker cereal tray. You've been listening to The Green Hornet, brought to you by the Betty Crocker cereal tray, the cereal assortment of individual packages of Wheaties, Cheerios, and Kix.
Wow, look at him go. He's the fastest ice skater in town.
He's feeling his Cheerios. Yes, Cheerios, that energizing breakfast cereal made from oats. Good old-fashioned nourishing oats, all ready to eat. Remember, for a breakfast cereal that really helps to build up strength, endurance, and energy, get Cheerios, that highly nutritious cereal with a wonderful fresh toasted oat flavor. The only cereal shaped like tiny, crisp, golden brown little donuts. Try it. For a better breakfast, always start with Cheerios. Be with us again next week at the same time when General Mills will again present The Green Hornet. This copyrighted feature originates in Detroit, and all characters, places, and incidents used are fictitious. Hal Neal speaking.
Tomorrow night, over the same station at the same time, the Lone Ranger justifies a small grandson's faith in his kindly old grandfather in another thrilling adventure of The Lone Ranger. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.